I'm just going to say this just as bluntly and as boldly as possible. If you're listening to this and you're a high income earner and you're going to H&R Block to do your taxes and pay, you know, your $300 to get your taxes done, you deserve to be paying what you're paying. And, you know, there's a reason why high income earners, successful people hire guys like Mike and Kevin. And in my opinion, they're the best in the business. And you do not tackle this stuff alone.
Hi, I'm Wyatt.
And I'm Grace.
And you're listening to Our Dad and your host of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with Experts Corner and my two favorite tax guys, Mike Pine and Kevin Schneider, from Revo Taxpayer Advocacy. Guys, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. We're happy to be here. Super excited.
Heck yeah. We've got we got this big, beautiful bill that just passed, and we haven't spoken since it did. And so, you know, we were talking about some anticipated changes, some things we were hoping for. Today, we're going to talk about what actually came through and what actually happened and how we can implement it as short-term rental investors. But also, there's a lot more than just short-term rental investor opportunities out there. And so I want to touch on some of that, because a lot of our listeners are high income earners trying to reduce our taxes as much as possible legally and be able to take that money and allocate it somewhere else. And so we're going to talk a little bit about all of that stuff. And you guys are the ones that know the details, not me. And so it's always fun having you guys back on the podcast.
Thanks. There are a lot of stuff. It is a big bill. There's a lot of beautiful stuff in it. Man, it's just an exciting time. Kevin and I are flying on cloud nine this week. It's amazing to see how much good stuff is in there. And quite honestly, it's really, really going to be good for our economy. When you look at all the pro-growth stuff built into this and the fact that they finally made these things permanent, bonus depreciation is permanent. It's not expiring in 5 years. Research and development deduction is permanent. All this stuff is permanent. Man, the economy, I can just hear the gears spinning up and starting to wind.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's really cool. Like, it's very rare that CPAs or accountants get to be the cool kids on the block. It's very rare. But every 4 years when tax law changes, suddenly Mike and I are the most popular kids on the playground.
Like, exactly.
How does this help? What does this do? And so it's an exciting time. I mean, it's going to be tremendous for not only real estate, and there's some catches in this bill too. I mean, it's not all just roses here, and that's kind of what we need to educate how tax law works.
100%.
It's always a push and pull with negotiations of, we can't just print tax breaks. That's not how money government works. So we need to walk through a lot of this.
Yeah. Love it. Where do you guys want to start? Do you think, I mean, obviously 100% bonus depreciation is always on top of mind for everybody, rolling through what that really means. It's still, you know, the three of us talk about this all the time, and we think that everybody already knows all about it. And the reality is, I also talk to a lot of people and like, man, I keep seeing all this stuff, but I don't even really understand it. And so I think we still should take some time and break down what that means. What, you know, the pros and the cons to being able to buy a property, bonus depreciate it. And it's not just properties, right? It's why businesses buy airplanes and things, equipment and things like that, because they can write off, they're getting a significant discount by bonus depreciating it. But I think we probably ought to just, let's talk about what that actually is, because we believe everybody knows what that is because we talk about it so often, but that's not the case and that's not the reality.
Well, let's change that. So we all know, well, let's say we don't all know what depreciation is. The IRS, the federal tax code has always required, if you buy an asset for use in a trade or business that has a useful life of more than 1 year, you don't get to just expense it. You buy a $10,000 taxi cab, you're not supposed to just expense it. You're supposed to deduct it or depreciate it over the life of the asset, over 5 years. You buy a residential real property, you're supposed to depreciate it over 27 and a half years. What bonus depreciation does is it incentivizes people to go out and buy more capital improvements now, because they're allowed to deduct it. They're allowed to spend all the money they spend on this, whether they're financing it or using cash, and deduct that from their taxable income in that year. It's a great incentive. Can you expand on that, Kevin?
Yeah, you're deducting it in full. So so for real estate, you know, if you buy a $500,000 rental property, all you do is take $500,000 divided by 27.5, and you get a number that's roughly $18,000. You get that deduction every year for 27 years, 18 grand, 18 grand, 18 grand. what bonus depreciation does, if we can get some of those costs of that home allocated to different lifespans, because if you think about it, when you buy a residential property, not everything is 27 and a half years. Never seen a stove, oven, flooring, yeah, countertops. You know, you got appliances, you have all these components that make up every single house that is made. That's not 27-year property. Instead of stove or oven, could be 5-year property. Flooring is 15-year property. So there's different lives in your residential property, even commercial. And if we can get some of that value out of the 27-year life and pushed into the 15, 7, or 5-year life, anything in those class lives are eligible for 100% write-off under this bill. So if we can get, on this example, a $500,000 house, we can get $150,000 classified into 15, 7, or 5-year class life, that's $150,000 deduction, not your $18,000 on the straight line. That is, yeah, the power of bonus, and it just ramps your ROI out of the gate, just right off the gate. Just getting this tax advantage, I mean, that saves you $150,000 deduction, saves you in the highest tax bracket. I mean, it's saving you $30,000-$40,000 in tax, right?
Yeah,
easy.
And if you're buying that property, and like what Kevin said, and I don't know if you guys, or I mean, Mike said before Kevin started explaining, that was also that it doesn't matter whether you pay cash for it or whether you finance it, you get to depreciate the entire amount that is allowable as bonus depreciation. So you could buy a $500,000 property with 10% down, have a tax write-off, like Kevin was saying, of 150 grand, and you're then all of a sudden you reduce your taxes by 45 grand, you're net into that property $5,000.
Yeah.
And that's where it gets really, really exciting, and why people like myself get really excited about, and we always say, let's let Uncle Sam, you know, really supplement and help us accelerate the growth of our portfolios. And it's why people get really excited about it. Now, there's a downside to it though as well. And the downside is, you can't just go out and buy any property or anything. You can, but the issue is, this is a one-time deal and you get that year one. Well, you have to own this property and it's going to be a long-term asset. What if it's a bad property? What if it's losing you money? What if it's not making you what you thought and you don't know how to play the game? Then all of a sudden you decide, I need to sell this property. Now, there's this thing called recapture of that depreciation if you go sell it next year because you didn't buy a good asset, right? And so let's dive into the recapture aspect of it, because this is where it becomes so important to be able to buy quality assets in quality areas. Because if I buy a property that's making me money every year, I have no real incentive to sell it, right? It's that mailbox money. But that takes some time and effort to understand that. And I think that a lot of people are just pushing this, especially I see it to physicians, high income earners. I see it a lot to physicians. And there's a lot of groups going after, hey, if you're a doctor and you can buy this property and you're going to reduce your taxes and everything else. And all of a sudden, most of them have no idea the game they're playing. And mm-hmm. they end up calling back a year or two later and saying, I don't really like this short term. I don't really like this game because it loses me money. It's not doing what I thought it was going to do. And then I'm shocked at how few people realize they have to recapture that tax savings when they go sell it, because they didn't know that in the very beginning.
You sound like a tax guy.
Yeah.
I'm on. You're hired.
You guys are cool now. I'm trying to be part of the cool kid, you know?
Yeah, dude, I'd pick you up. Yeah. No, you're right on. There's no such thing as a free lunch, very rarely, when we're dealing with taxes. So there's always ways. There's not ways around depreciation recapture, but you're exactly right. If we save, let's just very high level thinking, if you save 45 grand on this property, more than likely you're going to have to pay that 45 grand back in the year of disposition. Just very high level, without getting into the details. That's generally what's happening is mm-hmm. you get the tax break, you dispose of the property, you pay the tax break back. But the thought is, you have two things you can do. One, you have time value money working for you. If we save 45 grand today, what are you doing with that 45 grand to grow and invest it? And then when you sell the property, if you sell it within 2 or 3 years, that money hasn't worked as much. But if you sell it 10 years down the line, yeah, I'll pay my 45 grand back. I've already grown my 45 into 90 at this point. Right. Sure, here's your 45 back. I'm still netting high. But let's say this is a loser property and it's been 2 years and it's just a headache and you want to get rid of it. And you're, okay, I got to eat this tax bill. 1031 exchanges are a way to defer these gains. So if you still like real estate, you just don't like the area you're in, you can 1031 and defer and kick that can down the road, because it's all time value money. Let's not pay the government. Let's keep that investment growing. 1031 is a great way to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Now that bonus depreciation is permanent, it's not going away. And it's going to take an act of Congress and an agreeable president to sign it away. It is here to stay. if let's say you buy an underperforming property, it's not working, you want to sell it, you don't want to get depreciation recapture, but if you can find another property to replace it with without even doing a 1031, you buy a new property, you can take the bonus depreciation from that to offset your recapture. There's so many ways to mitigate and defer recognition of income, including depreciation recapture.
Yeah. And a lot of it is what, like the full recapture usually is the scenario when somebody says, I jumped into a game, didn't know what I was doing. I'm jumping back out and I'm not going to learn how to play the game or do it better next time and buy a better property or a better asset somewhere else where you can defer or bonus depreciate the next one. Like you guys are saying, it really stings if you're just going to full on get out of the game, right? Yeah. Hey, I use this, I'm going to sell, I'm going to cut my losses and I'm going to recapture. And then you're back to, you're really back to square one. There's no reason to go back to square one is kind of what we're saying too, though, as well, right? Is saying, hey, listen, it's okay to learn a lesson. It's okay to buy. I bought bad properties. I've been investing for 25 years. To act like I've never bought a bad property is crazy, right?
That's so you learn.
Yeah, exactly. And so there are times where, but it didn't stop me from staying in the game either. And the nice thing about all these rules that, you know, especially when you work with guys like you guys that actually know what they're doing. This is not something I'm just going to say this just as bluntly and as boldly as possible. If you're listening to this and you're a high income earner and you're going to H&R Block to do your taxes and pay, you know, your $300 to get your taxes done, you deserve to be paying what you're paying. And, you know, there's a reason why high income earners, successful people hire guys like Mike and Kevin. And in my opinion, they're the best in the business. And you do not tackle this stuff alone, in my opinion. This is a game that you hire the best in the business because they know how to mitigate those taxes that we're paying and mitigate the risks that we're taking when we're going out and investing in properties and everything else. And they can help us. Like we're right in the middle of a audit right now, right, Kevin? We're in the thick of it and we're passing with flying colors. We're going to come out on the next podcast and, you know, do it as a case study and say, hey, listen, but the reason I'm not worried about it is because these guys have been in my corner from day one, right? Mm-hmm. Where they're the best there is when it comes to strategizing on this. And now when everybody is talking about this, you really want to make sure you have people in your corner that understand the game you're going to be playing. And this is a big player on your team, which is your tax advisors. And, you know, I couldn't be more happy you guys are on my team for sure and should be on everybody's team listening. And, you know, if you're not I don't do sponsorships or ads or anything on the podcast. That's one that I'm happy to do.
Oh,
thank you, man.
Yeah. It is a definite need in the market. I mean, I just had a consult with a client yesterday and he was sitting on two short-term rental properties. I don't know if he came from your group or not, Sean, but he's sitting on two short-term rental properties and he had Goldman Sachs. He had some benefit at Goldman Sachs and they were doing his tax return every year for free. Well, they're financial advisors that had a tax add-on to it and they didn't focus on tax strategy. And he went to them and saying, hey, I'm hearing I could do something with these two short-term rentals. And they're like, you're not a real estate professional. You can't do anything with these. These are all, unless you're making under $150,000, you know, you can't do anything with these. And I was like, that is total garbage. Yeah. Total garbage. And I told him, you're sitting on a tax gold mine. You didn't even know it. Like for 2025, we're going to get you set up. And from there on, you're going to save $80,000 in tax. He's like, what?
Yeah. And those,
like, yes.
Those weren't H&R Block CPAs. Those were Goldman Sachs.
Goldman Sachs. And so
real estate taxation is, it's complex in the ways that there's so many things you could do. Not one real estate deal is the same. It is complex in that regard. But there's really only two types of rental properties that IRS specifies, long-term or short-term. Now, in real life, there's more. There's midterm, there's long-term, there's short. There's a lot of different kinds of rental properties you can buy. But in the IRS's eyes, there's two. There's two tax rule sets for each. 90% of the CPAs we talk to lump all real estate into one classification, which is long-term real estate. And it's not true. Short-term real estate has the best tax advantages out of any of the real estate classifications. You can be a W-2 high income earner, not be a real estate professional, and leverage a lifestyle asset to reduce your active income. And we can do it safely. We can do it correctly. And we can do it aggressively all at the same time. And so that is what we've noticed that the market really needs. And so that's why your community is great. We just love adding that shock is that I can do what? That drives us.
And it's
that.
A good shock. That's the fun part about what you guys are doing right now is most of the time that shock is, I mean, we were, you know, and again, we can't talk about everybody's exact tax situation, but we can tell kind of sort of stories about like the, but I mean, one of our members just now like saved a significant amount, showed up to one of our Boardroom HQ events that Mike was hosting and sat at the table and realized, I'm, you know, some light bulbs are going off. Talks to you guys and had a huge tax savings because of that shock of saying, what? That's available? I didn't know. I had professional CPAs doing this for me. Nobody told me this. And that's a pretty fun position to be in for you guys to very much understand it as well as it.
Like he knew there were benefits. That guy knew there were benefits, but once we got done educating him and he realized over time, it's going to take a couple of years because he's not going to pay taxes for a couple of years, but he's going to recover more in saved taxes than he put as a down payment on that property. Yeah. And man, that changes their lives. They're going to be able to buy another property in a year instead of having to wait two or three to save up from it. It's a big deal. I just want to add, I mean, there are good people at H&R Block, and I'm sure there's good tax people at Goldman Sachs. They probably have some incredible tax attorneys there. But the whole point of why you need good tax counsel is, unfortunately, our Internal Revenue Code's been made very complicated. It doesn't need to be as complicated as that's just how people operate in DC and our law writers. They've made it uber complicated, but we're not cheating when we do these things. What we're doing is we're actually utilizing the incentives that were intended to be put in the bill to grow the economy, to grow more housing. Those incentives are built into the code, and it is our duty as patriots to follow those incentives to grow the economy. And heck yeah, we deserve our taxes back. It's our money in the first place. It's not the government's. It's ours. You need to pay every dollar you're legally obligated to pay, but don't be paying more. That's just wasteful.
Yeah, 100%. And I, you know, real estate investors always speak of depreciation as the eighth wonder of the world, right? Because depreciation is such a beautiful thing because it's not a realized loss, right? Usually when you have a write-off, it has to do with an expense or a loss somewhere. And so you get these write-offs, right? You get these deductions. Well, depreciation is really just a paper loss because of the useful life of something. They're depreciating it over time. And so we get this lump sum to be able to take advantage of when we, you know, and essentially you're getting a discount on whatever you're buying by using that, right? And that discount can be significant. I mean, sometimes that discount is covering most of your down payment. Mm-hmm. But Kevin, you were saying, and let's talk about the qualifications a little bit, because you were mentioning, you know, when it comes to short-term rentals, they're this asset class within real estate that has huge tax advantages without being a real estate professional. And I think that this is something we talk about, material participation and then real estate professionals. And this is where a lot of even CPAs get confused because, like you said, they lump it into long-term real estate, which means you're not going to get these advantages without being a real estate professional. And I think that there's a lot of confusion on what qualifies and what doesn't, and really what that means and why we love short-term rentals first and foremost, and what that, like, let's talk a little bit more about the qualifications of what a short-term rental, how they qualify, but then also as a person, how we materially participate and qualify.
Yeah. So a little tax 101, whenever we meet with a new client or we are talking to somebody, we first had to diagnose their situation, just like a doctor would. You go to see a doctor, they don't know what to prescribe. They have to know what's going on. So if you've never sat down and had a prescription by a CPA, you're probably not getting personalized strategy. So that's the first thing you got to do is, because you have really two main classifications of income we were dealing with. There's three total. But you're dealing with an active classification of income, which is your W-2, your self-employed business. This is your earned income. That's considered what's active. Then you have passive income. Passive income is where real estate defaults to. It's where when you buy a rental property, it's going to start as a passive property. Then you have the third classification, which is portfolio income. That's your interest, dividends, cap gains. You know, if you sell a business, you know, more than likely you're going to have a cap gain problem. So it's important to understand what classification of income you're in, because that changes how you tax plan drastically. If you have a portfolio income tax problem, you tax plan differently than if you have an active tax problem. Mm-hmm. Because those buckets and classifications communicate differently with one another. Because if you just do nothing on the surface and you're, let's say you're making $500,000 as a W-2 earner and you buy a rental property and then you bonus depreciate some things in that rental property. Well, with not doing any work or any kind of due diligence on that property, that's a passive loss. And sadly to say, passive losses don't offset your active income. Otherwise, people would just scoop up a bunch of passive investments, write them off against their W-2, and that doesn't, they tied that loophole up in the 80s. Yeah. So now the name of the game is, okay, I have a rental property. If its average lease time is 7 days or less, then you can materially participate on that rental property. And this is all in publication 925. You can read it for yourself and do a quick search. But if the average lease time is 7 days or less, you're not going by real estate rules per se, because we're taking a position that this is a trader business now. You're not, this isn't a rental property. This is a new Airbnb business. And businesses have different tax qualifications to be active than real estate. So in order to have an active trader business, whether it's a lemonade stand or a rental property or a construction company, whatever it is, as long as you materially participate in the management and running of that business, it is considered an active trader business. Now, if there's losses in your active trader business and you have a high W-2, that's an active loss, and you have an active W-2, they're now they're in the same classification, and now your losses will offset that earned income. So don't believe the lie that if you're high income earning W-2 that you can just max out your 401k, max out your HSA. It's hogwash. You could do so much more. You're not stuck as a W-2 earner. There's even more that you can do. Just, you just got to be intentional.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just want to clarify one thing, because you mentioned to be, you know, to materially participate, you're in the active trader business. Part of that is, you know, managing and being in part of that, you know, actively involved in the management. That doesn't necessarily mean you have to manage your short-term rental. It means you have to be actively involved in managing the business.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. And managing a business could still be managing a property manager and your teams and everything else. Is that correct? Because that's a huge misconception out there.
Yeah, I've heard that misconception on multiple podcasts I listen to. It is a misconception. Now, the fact is, if you have a full service manager, it makes it more complicated. It makes it a little harder to prove that you're a material participant, but you absolutely can material participate. Even if you have full service manager, full cleaning crew, you just have to qualify under the material participation rules.
So let's talk about those rules, Mike. When you know, I know you always talk about the gold standard, the 500 hours, right?
Yeah.
A lot of Instagram posts right now are talking about the 100-hour rule. And there's multiple ways to qualify. So that can be a little confusing for people as well, yeah, right?
There's seven ways to qualify.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways. Those are the two that are talked about the most.
Agreed. They're the easiest ones to navigate and prove, and they're not nebulous. Like the second standard, I try to stay away from. It just says you materially provided most of the services required for the business. And there's just too much room for interpretation and opinions in that. And I don't want to have to deal with opinions when I'm dealing with the IRS. So the safe harbor, the gold standard, is if you spend 500 hours on a business, that's it. You or you and your spouse, you can combine your time. Unlike real estate professional rules, spouses can and are supposed to combine their time for material participation. If you hit the 500 hours, I don't care if you have two people managing your property, the IRS says you are a material participant. As a matter of fact, they would require you to report as a material participant even if you didn't want to. And in some cases, that would be to your detriment. The rules that we use to qualify for material participation, the arguments we use are the arguments that for the last 30 years, the IRS has been making against taxpayers wanting to claim that they were passive in activities. They didn't want to be subject to self-employment tax. So the IRS came out with these rules, and they've been litigating these rules in tax courts for 30 plus years. And we're just using those exact arguments that the IRS came up with to qualify as a material participant. And you absolutely can do it with a management company. The second one that we call the bronze standard is the 100 hours and more than anyone else. The difficulty with that one is you have to prove, unlike in normal constitutional law, I don't agree with this, but this is the fact, you are guilty until proven innocent with the IRS. Shouldn't be that way, but you are. The burden of proof is on the taxpayer. So the 100 hours rule is, that's fine. You are a material participant. If you spend 100 hours or more than 100 hours, plus more than any other individual. That's what the regulations say. More than any other individual. Well, how are you going to prove how much time you spent compared to the management company? I mean, there are ways to do it, but that's up to you to prove it. How much time did the cleaner spend? How much time did your handyman spend? You can prove it, and it's very provable, and we've won plenty of audits with that, but you have to prove it, and the burden of proof is on you.
Yeah. And that's where that's where it becomes saying, hey, listen, and there's a lot of people we're publishing this in the second half of the year. Right. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people that rule will and may apply because they go buy a property in the next couple months. It's only operational for the second quarter of the third quarter, fourth quarter of the year. And all of a sudden it's in service, getting some bookings, but maybe they only have 10 bookings for the whole year. Mm-hmm. But they set this whole property up over a couple month period. Right. And right. So sometimes those are likely scenarios. I think that the 100-hour rule will come into play and apply because, you know, if you've got a management partner, cleaners, everybody else in there, and there's only been three or four bookings, maybe 10 bookings, it's a little easier to go prove their time on spent on something than if you have to track an entire year of their time right. on your property. Right.
Right. So, and you have to find a manager that's willing to work with you because most management yeah. companies don't want to track their time, but you yeah. need them to, if they're going to work with you. And
yeah.
your Vodacy group has been really good at working and coaching management companies to work with the owners for the specific reason. And they've learned, hey, if I work with them, these owners will be able to buy more properties and my business will grow through them. So they need to work yeah. with them.
Yeah. Love it. Awesome. So let's dive into a couple of the other, you know, big advantages that we were talking about before we hit record. I know that you're really excited about opportunity zones.
I am.
And I'm getting more excited about it, listening to you be excited about it. So
I'll convince you, man.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. Let's dive into that a little bit.
So one of the other things that was made permanent that used to be sunsetting was qualified opportunity zone investments. Those are super cool. They're great for the economy. They have a great intended purpose and they played out a little bit. But when we originally got them in the 2017 Tax Cut and Jobs Act, they were expiring in 7 years. There were these artificial milestone dates. Like if you didn't buy something in opportunity zone by 2020, you didn't get to defer anything permanently. Now, opportunity zones, and I'll get into what they are, but now they are permanent. There's no artificial dates or milestones on here. It's just a 5-year rolling deal. And they offer two amazing opportunities. Let me first say, what is an opportunity zone? And the whole purpose behind this. There's a lot of economically distressed areas in the country that no one wants to put capital into and grow. That's not good for the people that are stuck in that community. So this is actually another great bill. Not all laws that come out of DC are good, in my opinion, or make sense. This one makes perfect sense. It's incentivizing people. Hey, if you invest in these areas where the majority of the population is under twice the actual poverty rate, the average poverty rate, they have different rulings, whether it's by state or nation. But basically, if the people are disadvantaged economically, it can be called and created as an opportunity zone. They originally created all the original opportunity zones back in 2018. They're going to recreate them now every 10 years starting next July of 2026. We're going to have new OZs all over the place. So then when you have an opportunity zone, if anyone, let's say you sold stock or you sold a building or you sold a business, you have a gain that you're supposed to pay taxes on that year, right? You've recognized the gain. Well, to incentivize people to invest in these opportunity zones, they came up with a rule and said, as long as you take that money from your gain and invest it into a qualified opportunity zone fund within 180 days, you don't have to recognize that gain that year. As a matter of fact, you don't have to recognize it next year. You can defer it for 5 years. And if you defer it the full 5 years, you do have to recognize some of it, but only 85% of it. So that gives you, when you talk about the time value of money concept that Kevin was talking about earlier, you get to hold on to that capital and let it grow for you for 5 years before you give it to the government. That's just the first really cool part about opportunity zones. Second part is whatever you put that money into, if you hold on to that investment, that business, that real estate, that short-term rental for 10 years, now you sell it 100% tax-free. So not only do you get to defer gain for 5 years, you get to permanently defer any gain after 10 years that happened in that property. There's a lot of rules you have to follow. A lot of hoops and hurdles to get through, but if you do it right and you comply with the law, man, I love this thing. And then you combine it with short-term rentals and you can still get the short-term rental loophole, offset active income, defer gain, and after 10 years you decide you're going to sell this property, get tax-free money. I mean, it's beautiful. Yeah, how can you not be excited about that?
Yeah. And if you think about, like, what's the purpose of this? Well, they're taking distressed areas, and some of these qualified opportunity zones are distressed on the map, but they're like Broken Bow. We were just talking before we hopped on. It's a Q zone. Do you know how many very high end properties are in Broken Bow?
Yeah.
These aren't, you're not going to urban Detroit all the time. You know, there are some pockets.
Although that's an OZ too, but
yeah.
You got to pick your OZs.
But that's what we think about a lot. At least for me, that's what I thought about until I really understood how they classify it. And it does make complete sense that some of these rural vacation areas qualify, because it's not based on property values. It's not based on any of that. It's based on average income in an area, right?
There's two OZs in the Branson, Missouri area.
Yeah.
There's OZ zones along the coast in Florida with $5-6 million beachfront condos.
Yeah.
There are beautiful OZs around that are great for investment.
Yeah.
But you have your Detroits in there. And the whole thought behind the bill is going to be, they don't want a bunch of investors coming in there, building something and flipping it. They want stable ownership. So that's why there's a 5-year hold period and a 10-year kicker, is they're like, hey, if you're going to invest in this to get the benefit, we need you in the community for 10 years. And actually, let's develop our country. Let's develop these unprivileged areas. But there's some areas at pockets.
Just to speak to that a little bit more, I mean, one of the other rules, and you got to be careful, you can't just buy an opportunity zone investment and be done in most cases. If you go through a big qualified opportunity zone fund, you can be one and done. But if you're doing this on your own and getting a short-term rental, not only do you have to buy the property, but within 2 years, you've got to substantially improve that property. So you can't just go buy a business and be done with it. You can buy a business, but then you have to improve the business. You do all those qualifications, man, you get the best of both worlds. And we're just talking about short-term rentals or even long-term rentals here, but you can do this with any type of business. Any trade or business in an opportunity zone qualifies. So a lot of cool stuff you can do with that.
Yeah, and where they're going to start requalifying areas every 10 years starting next year, that's pretty exciting too, because again, a lot of these backyard resort communities are fairly rural areas when it comes to the economies of these areas and the average income in these areas, even, and they're very good opportunities for short-term rental investments. And most likely I would assume we're going to start to see some pretty cool areas pop up on the map as qualified opportunity zones. And we always say, even though we're short-term investments, it's a long-term game. We're playing the long-term game. And so if you are already playing the long-term game and you are going to go in there and qualify for this, man, you know how it's pretty fun to be able to sell properties 10 years from now, tax-free, it appreciated for 10 straight years. And then you get that gain.
Yes.
And most of these areas, frankly, the ones we're talking about are actually appreciate better than the national average. So it can be a significant tax savings when you're not paying on that gain 10 years from now.
Oh yeah. And no depreciation recapture either if it's in the OZ after 10 years. It's so beautiful. But you know, Sean, I just realized we've been talking about really good stuff. This one big, beautiful bill has a lot more stuff than just depreciation, opportunity zones. Those are two of my favorites, but I don't know how much if you want the other rest of the bill you want to get into. I mean, we take 10 hours to cover 90%. Like,
let's talk about whatever's popping in your head right now that made you think about that. Because this is, I will say, you guys, and before we wrap up the show, obviously, you guys know in the show notes, Mike and Kevin's contact information, how to get a hold of them at Rebo, will be in there. But these guys really specialize in a number of different areas. Short-term rental real estate investing is one. You guys are very familiar with oil and gas stuff. Because you're, you know, all the, and we'll, I would love to have a list of that stuff of what you really can, you know, the areas of expertise that you really love helping people with. But what's some of the other stuff on the big, beautiful bill that you're thinking about right now?
Well, these aren't big things that we're going to be helping with, but we have to talk about them, because all we heard about for the entire election season was no tax on tips, no tax on overtime. Yeah. So Kevin, you want to at least share that tidbit?
Yeah, so no tax on tips, no tax on overtime. It's a great benefit. I've held jobs, you know, in my teens and early going through college where I lived on tips. It would have been great to save a couple thousand dollars. That would have been life changing for me when I'm working my way through school, that I could have saved that money. So there's going to be some stipulations to it. There's going to be some income thresholds. You can't make over, I think, $150,000 single or $300,000 married. But your first $25,000 that you earn in tips or overtime is going to be tax-free. And the way that works is you would report the gross amount on your 1040 tax return. So you're going to report it as income, but then you're going to have a deduction for $25,000, if it was, you know, over $25,000 that you received, you would only deduct $25,000, and then the rest would remain taxable on your tax return. So yeah, you're not going to see a change in your W-2 as much. It's just going to be your 1040.
Kevin and I were so excited when we heard it on the campaign trail, because first you heard Trump say it, then Harris said it, and we're like, wow, if they're both saying this, this might actually happen. Yeah. How are we going to redesign our salary at the firm to be tips and overtime? but unfortunately, Congress was smarter than they usually are, and they came into those stipulations. Can't do it. It's got to be in a business where it's normally customary to get
customary
paid
for tips.
Another big one is referred to as a QBI deduction or Section 199A deduction or pass-through deduction. It's got a few other names. But this was going to expire, and now it's permanent. And what this does is it puts small business on parity with the big, huge national, multinational corporations that only pay 21% tax. Normally, if you own a small business in a partnership, in an S-corp, or just as a sole proprietorship, you're actually paying a higher tax rate because you're subject to 37% federal tax rate at the top rate. Whereas big Apple Corp, they're only paying 21% on their net profits, if they show any net profits. This pass-through deduction is trying to make it more fair and level the playing field for us normal people and small guys. And you get a beautiful, there's a lot of stipulations and hoops and hurdles, but you get a beautiful 20% magical phantom deduction. Make $1 million, $200,000 deduction. Doesn't apply to everyone. Unfortunately, it doesn't fully apply to Kevin and I as professional CPAs or doctors or lawyers, but it's that back and it's permanent. And that's a beautiful thing. And people need to be thinking about that when they're talking to their tax advisors.
Yeah. There's so much to think about, right? When you are like, because every time you mention the good, there's always a qualification for it. And it's like, hey, listen, you really have to understand the T's to cross, the I's to dot. So you're running down this road with your eyes wide open. And that's why I said in the middle of the show, you know, it's why I work with you guys and why I suggest everybody else I know works with you guys, you know, and it's just making sure you really understand these. And you can hear, you guys that are listening, you can hear in Mike and Kevin's voice, they do get kind of excited about this stuff.
How can you not?
I don't know how, but they like talking about taxes, and you guys are like, you guys have always been cool in my eyes. And so you're like you said, you're the cool kids now, but it is, you guys have always been fun to talk about and talk to. So, but I love when you're working with somebody that is excited about everything they're doing and being able to leverage the rules and the laws and everything else that are out there, because you know, you guys always say that they're written for us to take advantage of and use, and they're written because they're trying to incentivize growth and investments in different areas. And so it's not like we're just trying to, you know, take back, and you're really trying to give back. That's why the rules are there. They're encouraging us to give back to those types of communities, particularly opportunity zone type areas that you're mentioning.
Yeah. Oil and gas is another thing where you've heard, you know, drill baby drill and all this kind of stuff. It is important for our country to be energy independent, or at least be working towards energy independence, not relying on the Middle East with all the things going on in the Middle East and the trade and all these issues that can come geopolitically. We want to make sure that there are incentives in the tax code to incentivize us to invest in the oil and gas space. And there's huge incentives there. So what we always like to do is saying, I love real estate as an investment. One, it's a great just asset class to buy into, to grow in appreciation. Fair value historically is growing over time. If you make a good investment in a good area, you're saving on taxes, receiving cash flow, all is good. But there still could be, you can only maybe buy one or two rental properties a year. There's a lot of due diligence. It's a lot of capital. It's a lot of management. And so some people will buy a short-term rental and still their income is so high, they still have a looming tax liability. Well, you can start buying down some tax liability in the oil and gas space without any material management at all. It is going back to our classifications, it's a passive activity. But because of the incentives in the Internal Revenue Code to invest in this space, the passive losses in this industry are actually transitioned to active automatically to incentivize investors. So there's a lot of cool tax planning stuff in oil and gas. And so that's another opportunity we always like to explore with our clients. Is it's an asset class that's riskier than real estate. I never want to go too heavy in oil and gas, because you got price per barrel, all the political things. This industry is very shaky. It's very hard to live on unless you got really thick skin. But it's what we consider kind of like play money. You know, if you have some play money and you want to dabble into some tax, get some immediate tax savings on your investment. But if you hit the oil, you're looking at a good ROI. And yeah. We have our own fund that solves that, is because you to invest into like an oil and gas deal, for instance, you have to have a minimum of $50,000 to $250,000 per deal. You have to be an accredited investor and invest these large minimums. Well, to really diversify in this risky space, you might need a substantial amount of capital. I mean, if this operator wants 250, this one wants 100, this one wants 50. I mean, you're almost $500,000 to diversify in this space. And so Mike and I's solution to this for our clients is we have five operators in our fund. So we have a minimum of $50,000 investment in our fund, but we take your $50,000 and we dice it into fifths or fourths, depending on the operators in our fund at the time. And we hit the minimums of these four operators with your $50,000 investment because we're pooling your money in with other investors. So we have other investors reaching the minimums of these operators, getting into these deals and diversifying. So you're in four oil and gas deals with one investment and you're diversified. And these operators, you know, they're in Texas, they're in Pennsylvania. We have different regions that we invest in to further diversify. They have different theologies on drilling, some horizontal, some deeper, some shallow. They all have these different theologies. It's such a technical space with geology reports, and it is a crazy space, but it's very lucrative. Oil is very, there's a lot of money there and there's a lot of tax savings, but there's risk. And that's what our fund solves, is the hedging. We hedge a lot of that risk.
Yeah.
So it's very cool.
I just want to add on one tail end of what you were saying before 3 minutes ago about the incentives in the tax code. They're there for us to help grow the economy. Mm-hmm. I read this study earlier this year. Do you know if we came up with a new tax law that says everyone making over $100,000, everything over $100,000 goes straight to the Fed, goes straight to the Treasury Department. You know, if we did that for 10 years, everyone in this country making over $100,000 gave everything they made to pay down our debt, we wouldn't pay down but a third of our debt. And for 10 years, you'd have zero growth. You'd have no economy. The only way we're going to get this debt handled is by growing our way out of it. Yep. You can't overtax out of it. You need these kind of incentives. So just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I've heard the same type of scenarios many, many times. And it's the only way is you grow your way out of it. And it's going to be small businesses, individual investors that are really solving the problem. I mean, this is the backbone of America. And it is, that has to start to happen. That growth has to be there. And then ultimately, hopefully we have some good stewards of those tax dollars that are being sent to Washington. And I think that's a whole different discussion of whether we do or don't half the time.
But
the only way to do it is growth, right? It's like they always say, you know, Andy Frisella, I listen to, he says, personal excellence is the ultimate rebellion. It's like, you know, we're going to be our own solution to this problem that's been created. Yeah. And it's not just like you said, taking all of it off the top and then paying it down, because then it just stops. There's no growth. There's no economy. There's no nothing. Right. And so awesome, guys. You guys, I love the conversations with you guys. I always appreciate you joining me. You guys are by far my most, my highest repeat, guests on the show. And so it's,
good.
I love having these conversations. You guys have had so much value to myself, my business, our whole Vodacy family, and everybody else that you guys are working with out there. Those of you listening, we will post Mike and Kevin's information, Revo Taxpayer Advocacy, how you can get a hold of those guys. We'll list the different areas of expertise that they, because it's not, you know, these guys are at the top of the food chain when it comes to the tax advisors in the entire nation. And so depending, if you're a high income earner, and you're, you know, you don't have an advisor like these guys, I 100% give them my gold star of approval and get a hold of them.
If you don't want to reach out to us yet, check us out on hiddenmoney.com, where we have our own podcast. Maybe not as cool as yours, in my opinion.
Oh, it's a lot cooler.
It's all on tax.
You guys do a great job.
You'll learn a lot more.
Thanks. Yeah, I actually had a new client come in yesterday and they heard us on the podcast and he goes, man, you and Mike are actually fun to, I was like, that is the first time anyone has classified me as fun to listen to about a tax and money podcast. I was like, thank you. No, that was encouraging to hear.
You're selling yourself short. Hidden Money Podcast is where, that's what I tell everybody. If you want to go listen to that stuff, I actually send them episodes. Like when we have new prospects coming in, I actually clip, my sales team has like 3 or 4 clips from your guys' episodes that we send.
Love
them.
It. So, yes. Yeah,
it's cool. Absolutely a good resource, you guys. I mean, we have them on every once in a while, but these guys talk about this stuff all the time on their Hidden Money Podcast. And so go tune into that as well. We'll put a link to that as well so you can listen to that on whatever platform you watch or listen to your podcast on. So, guys, we'll wrap it up. I always appreciate you. You guys are rock stars. Love you. Appreciate you. And thanks for joining us. You guys that are listening, we know how valuable your time is, and we appreciate you spending it with us. If you got any value out of this show, our goal is to help you walk into this game with your eyes wide open. If you know somebody else that would like to do the same, we'd always love you to share the show. If you have more than 30 seconds, like it or review it on whatever platform you're watching, listening on, wherever you like to consume your podcast, those reviews help us, and we appreciate it. The final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today to start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website?
Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.